Okay, good evening. I would like to call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Today's March 29th, 2023. Let the record reflect that it is 6:32 PM. My apologies for the delay. We've had some business here that needed to get taken care of before we could get the committee meeting started. Today we have present Representative Groh, Representative McKay, Representative McCabe, Representative Gray, Representative Allard, Representative Carpenter, myself, the chair. In the room, we've got Senator Meyer. Thank you for joining us, sir. Please silence your cell phones so we don't have any embarrassing rings. And also, Representative Tilton has joined us. Staff will be assisting us today as Kevin Allen with his records and Zachary Lawhorn with the LIO. Thank you, gentlemen, for being here. Kendra Broussard's our committee aide today, and she'll be assisting. Today, we're going to hear two bills and then discuss the long-term fiscal model if we have time in the interest, and I am looking at my script and I'm not going to have time. So we're going to hear two bills and a brief conversation about what's next. Today we're hearing House Bill 110, permanent fund transfer dividend program to the Permanent Fund Corporation, and House Bill 142, state sales and use tax. Being the sponsor of both of these bills, I'm going to take a brief at ease and hand the gavel over to Representative McCabe, who's going to chair the meeting so that we can come and present these bills. So we'll take a brief at ease and I'll hand the gavel over.
Begin your presentation on HB 110 Permanent Fund Transfer Dividend Program to APFC.
Good evening, Representative Ben Carpenter, District 8.
I'm Kendra Broussard, staff to Representative Carpenter.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I'll start with a sponsor statement and then turn it over to Kendra for the remainder. Okay, for almost 30 years, Alaskans could count on their annual dividend checks as the state legislature followed the law that directed the dividend to be paid by a statutory formula. Since 2017, the permanent fund dividend has been subjected to the budget process, where the dividend competes with government spending, and cutting the dividend often becomes the deficit reduction solution of choice. House Bill 110 returns the permanent fund dividend to a statutory transfer and takes it out of the appropriations process. House Bill 110 ensures the growth of the permanent fund. It eliminates one of two potentially conflicting sections of statute that calculate income available for distribution from the permanent fund. The remaining calculation of income available for distribution from the permanent fund will be a five-year average of percent of market value of the fund. So in essence, this is removing the traditional 21% of net earnings statute. House Bill 110 preserves Governor Hammond's vision of the dividend being the first call on the distribution from the fund. The first call on the distribution will be for the required payment of dividends of 50% of that percent of market value draw. House Bill 110 preserves the corpus of the permanent fund. After the required dividend payment, the remainder of the 50% market value allowable draw, or the balance of the earnings reserve fund, whichever is less, will be available for government spending. House Bill 110 transfers the administration of the permanent fund dividend program from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. The dividend fund will therefore be transferred to the Permanent Fund Corporation. While an amendment to Alaska's Constitution is needed to enable a constitutional dedication of income from the permanent fund, House Bill 110 makes the intent of the legislature to pay a dividend by statute clear.
And through the chair, this is Kendra Broussard. I will read the sectional now. So, sections 1 through 21 is conforming language for the transfer of the permanent fund dividend program from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. Section 22 removes the district court's jurisdiction over review of the constitutionality of the dividend payment. Section 23 through 28, conforming language for the transfer of the permanent fund dividend program from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. And Section 29 amends public finance statute to eliminate one of two conflicting calculations for the income available for distributions from the permanent fund earnings reserve account. The income available for distribution from the account is 5% of the average market value of the fund, POMV, permanent fund balance, including the earnings reserve fund. for the first 5 of the preceding 6 years. Section 30 requires the Permanent Fund Corporation to make the annual Permanent Fund dividend payment without appropriations. The dividend amount is calculated at 50% of the amount available for distribution, or 50% of the 5% average POMV from Section 29, but shall never exceed the balance in the Earning Reserve Fund. Section 31 conforms the Amerada Hess language that does not allow income from the settlement to be available for distribution to the dividend or general fund. Section 32 allows the legislature to appropriate an amount from the earnings reserve account to the state general fund to spend on government. Section 33 limits the combined total transfer from the earnings reserve fund to the dividend fund and to the general fund to the lesser of 5% POMV and the balance of the earnings reserve fund. Section 34 conforms the mental health trust language that does not allow the net income from the trust to be available for distribution for the dividend or the general fund. Sections 35 through 45 is conforming language for the transfer of the Permanent Fund Dividend Program from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. Sections 46 provides for a transition to the transfer of administration of the dividend program to the Permanent Fund Corporation and transfers the balance of the dividend fund to the permanent fund on July 1, 2024. Section 47 provides for an effective date of July 1, 2024.
Mr. Chair, can we have a brief of these?
Back on the record.
Ms. Hello, sir?
That would be awesome.
All right. I can go over the fiscal note briefly. DOR. Okay. I'll do my best at going over the... Actually, can you check that and see if DOR is online? Department of Revenue is online?
Yep.
They are?
Mr. Spanos.
Okay, very good. I am glad that that worked out. We've got two fiscal notes here from Department of Revenue, and I would ask Mr. Spanos to cover them if he would be so willing.
So, Mr. Spanos, are you online? Can you hear us, and did you hear the question? I don't know that he's online. He's showing up here.
So it's a possibility with the delay that he's didn't know we started.
Okay.
Sorry, I was double muted. I had my...
Double muted.
There you go.
So, for the record, Brandon Spanos, Deputy Director with the Tax Division. I'm actually here to speak to HB 142 for the Department of Revenue. So I don't have a familiarity with the fiscal notes before you for this bill, 110.
Okay, thank you. It's all up to you, Representative Carpenter.
I'll give it my best here. Okay, so the first fiscal note that I'm talking to is the OMB component 981. And down at the bottom right-hand corner says control code WEDYQ. This is from the Department of Revenue Allocation Permanent Fund Division. What this shows is the fiscal year 24 appropriation is a total of $8.5 million in reduction to represent the transfer of the permanent fund program from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. So the analysis page in the back states that the bill transfers the duties of the administering the Permanent Fund Dividend Program from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Corporation. This includes determining the value of each dividend, payment of each dividend. The bill also moves the dividend fund to the Permanent Fund Corporation as a separate fund within the corporation. This fiscal note assumes the Permanent Fund Dividend Division moves from the taxation and treasury appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation appropriation. The second fiscal note has a control code in the bottom right-hand corner of OSLEH. It is a Department of Revenue fiscal note with the allocation of the Permanent Fund Corporation, OMB component number 109. This one has asterisks in the fiscal year 24 here, which is representing a indeterminate. And the analysis on the back page kind of explains why. House Bill 110 seeks to make changes to the state's permanent fund dividend program, the PFD program. Among these is a transfer of the management of the PFD program from the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue to the Executive Director of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. This fiscal note pertains only to this element of House Bill 110. An important dynamic to understand is that the Department of Revenue is an integral part of the administrative enterprise of the state of Alaska. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation is a quasi-public corporation that is almost entirely segregated from the state's administrative enterprise. As a division in the Department of Revenue, the Permanent Fund Dividend Division is reliant on certain services provided by multiple state agencies, including the Department of Revenue, Office of Information Technology, Division of Finance, Division of Shared Services, and the Criminal Investigations Unit. Removing the Permanent Fund Dividend Division from the state's administrative enterprise would require the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation to replicate the administrative infrastructure on which the Permanent Fund Division currently relies. While this is not an impossible transition project, it is a project that would require substantial resources, planning, and care in project execution. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation would need to create and provide IT support, cybersecurity, accounting, and administrative support and infrastructure to the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. Since the Permanent Fund Dividend Division maintains the confidential personal and banking information of most Alaskans, the highest degree of care must be taken during the transition to ensure the information remains secure and its integrity maintained. At this time, the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation's assessment of the costs of this project are necessarily rough estimates, and therefore the fiscal note is indeterminate. To achieve any degree of accuracy in budgeting for the costs of such a project, Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation would likely need to procure a project manager, experience in major data and systems transition implementation. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation estimates the cost of a project manager to scope this project and prepare a project plan would be approximately $100,000 to $250,000. The following is a summary outlined in this document of projected costs that the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation can currently envision that would be in addition to the current budget of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division. So, it lists IT costs here, replacement of Office of Information Technology functions. The Permanent Fund Dividend Division currently budgets $200,000 interagency receipts for Office of Information Technology support services. The Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation estimates incremental costs of $409,000 to add four new positions to cover all core IT services. That's user administration, help desk, cloud server administration, etc. Additionally, $217,000 to personnel services, two help desk positions, $392,000 personnel services for two infrastructure positions, licensing for SQL servers, Windows workload servers, cloud software and service licensing, Azure services, and data storage. Permanent Fund Dividend Division currently budgets $111,000 interagency receipts to the Office of Technology for Licenses and Infrastructure. The Permanent Fund Corporation estimates incremental costs of $109,000 for services. Permanent Fund Dividend Division currently pays $15,000 for network access. The corporation anticipates a doubling of its current network cost from $12,000 to $24,000. This would represent a savings of about $3,000. The horizontal virtual desktop interface licensing. The corporation anticipates a doubling of that current cost. This would be an incremental cost of $90,000 in services. The third page of the fiscal note continues with the Permanent Fund Dividend Division workstations. The corporation would add Permanent Fund Dividend Division to its three-year refresh cycle, and the corporation estimates an incremental cost of $300,000 in commodities. Permanent Fund Division application security. The division has a number of applications, which are Dividend Application Information System, Revenue Permanent Fund Information System, and an acronym that I don't know what it means. It's an ILINX imaging system. The corporation would need to evaluate each application for security as well as determination whether to locate the application in the Microsoft Azure cloud. The corporation does not have a cost estimate for this item. The PFD application portal currently relies on the OIT or Office of Information Technology support on the MyAlaska portal to manage online applications and identity verification. The corporation would need to replicate a secure and resilient portal to replace MyAlaska. Corporation does not have a cost for this. Permit Fund Dividend Division Applications Upgrade. The corporation anticipates a need to rebuild of the Permit Fund Division applications into a contiguous and agile ecosystem, an upgrade to the system. A goal here is to increase security, increased automation, improved PFD application processing time, and enhance flexibility on the Permit Fund Dividend distribution. There's not a cost estimate for this at this time. So there would also be modifications to the accounting system. Consulting time will be required to export and import data files. The corporation estimates one-time incremental costs of about $20,000 in services. We need to align accounting positions for management of the permanent fund dividend fund. Investment management of the fund would have to be done under a different asset allocation with separate reporting and tracking of expenses. The permanent fund division and dividend division accounting positions would need to be aligned with the corporation accounting positions, and that estimate is about $50,000 personnel services. Two remaining items on this page, the permanent fund corporation would assume the responsibilities to obtain an independent audit of the division and of the permanent fund, the permanent fund dividend fund. Corporation estimates about $75,000 for that. Office rent. The corporation does not anticipate any changes to the Permit Fund Division's Anchorage or Fairbanks office space to the extent that removal of the dividend division from the state's administrative enterprise requires relocation out of the state office building. There may be incremental costs for rent moving and office build out, and no estimate is provided for that. Those are the two fiscal notes associated with this bill.
Okay, sounds like a lot of stuff for an indeterminate fiscal note. So I guess now we'll look at the committee and see if there's any questions. Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm just curious, through the chair, if having read through this fiscal note, the OSIEH, it sounds like moving the permanent fund from the Department of Revenue to the Permanent Fund Division is going to be extraordinarily difficult, expensive, and potentially risky to the Alaskan public, as they talked about in that fourth paragraph. I think the fourth paragraph is the one where, you know, they mentioned having all the information and having to transfer it in a secure way. So I was just curious if there's a way to do everything you want to do in your bill without moving the permanent fund. That's the question.
Through the chair, this is Representative Carpenter to Representative Gray. It's a good question. I believe that you could continue to pay the permanent fund dividend from the Department of Revenue as it currently is without making this change. There are two significant changes, I think, that are included in this bill and share the thinking of this. Number one, we're trying to solve a political problem that is stabilizing the way we do the permanent fund dividend and taking it out of the appropriations process and how the legislature manages the permanent fund dividend program. In moving and assuming any of the costs necessary to move the program from Department of Revenue to the corporation, we would be moving the program one step further away from both the legislature and the executive branch by sequestering it in under the purview of the corporation. If you think about other corporations in the public sphere or in the private sphere who pay dividends, they all do that. And there is a question, and I remember having this conversation in the past, why didn't the corporation pay the dividend in the first place? So cost-wise, read through the fiscal note, and there's a lot of unknowns with the cost piece of this. The headspace, if you will, is about $8 million from the first fiscal note. This is the savings that would be generated from Department of Revenue that would be available for spending on the change to go to the permanent fund corporation. Some of what was identified is above and beyond that $8 million, but we don't quite know exactly what that was until we actually have a program that's going to happen and there's a better estimate done. A manager gets hired and then we would have to know that, right? But the policy call is helping to solve the political equation by removing the PFD program from the executive and legislative processes and just have it done as a function of the Permanent Fund Corporation. So the Permanent Fund Corporation would cut checks to Alaskans and cut a check to the state government every year, and it would just happen. This would have, and we spoke about this in the sectional analysis, you would have to have a constitutional amendment that repeals the Willikowski decision and allows the Permanent Fund Corporation program to be dedicated to be able to do that. I'll take the opportunity to also speak about one of the provisions in the bill that removes the jurisdiction of the courts, specifically the lower courts. Point being, we're trying to send a message as a legislature that we want this PFD problem done and we don't have to deal with it again. And we don't want the executive branch or the legislative branch or the judicial branch to mess with it. It just is going to be paid. It's just going to be done, and it no longer becomes maintains a status as a political football within the legislative and executive budget cycle. We don't want the lower courts telling us what we can and can't do. We don't want the legislature telling us what we can and can't do. We don't want the executive branch telling us what we can and can't do. We want to get it separated and set aside so that it just happens and we can focus on other important things. This is one additional step that would further insulate that PFD program from government. Could we do it without it? We probably could, but would it be as insulated?
Okay, Representative Groh.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Chair. I have two questions about messages. One you just touched on, so I'll start with that. So this legislation removes the district court's jurisdiction over the constitutionality of the dividend payment. But in the Alaska state system, and been a lawyer for a long time, have not practiced for a few years, my recollection of it is that those lawsuits or actions start in the Superior Court. So is this a messaging, this Section 22 a messaging section only, or how do you see it, Representative Carpenter?
Thank you. Good question, Representative Groh. Through the chair, this is Representative Carpenter. You're absolutely right. The Constitution prevents the legislature from telling the Superior Court and the Supreme Court what their jurisdiction is. That's just by nature. Their jurisdiction is not limited by the courts, or not limited by the legislature. So this is more than just messaging. It is saying that no case can be brought against the state of Alaska for how it manages the Permanent Fund Corporation dividend program into the lower courts, which it wouldn't likely do anyway. But it is a message being sent from the legislature to the courts that says, this is meant, we are, and if you take this bill in conjunction with the constitutional amendment that dedicates the fund, it is a message that says, all three branches of the government need to get out of this program, stop telling the legislature what it can and can't do, separate the program out, and just do the program every year so that we stop fighting over that money.
Okay, follow-up, Mr.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Carpenter. Now I want to switch to the whole purpose of the bill, and then Section 30, as I see the whole purpose, which is to require the Permanent Fund Corporation to make the annual Permanent Fund dividend without appropriation. I understand the intention here, but as you have said, and the sponsor statement acknowledges, quoting the sponsor statement, the last paragraph, an amendment to the last constitution is needed to enable constitutional dedication of income from the permanent fund. I left off the first word while there. Is this also trying to send a message which but is perhaps confusing or misleading the public to send the wrong message in terms of what's actually occurring if this bill were passed, that there's an intent stated by the legislature wants to do, would it actually require a constitutional amendment to require the annual payment of permanent fund dividends without legislative appropriation?
Representative Groh, through the chair. This is Representative Carpenter for the record. Nope, it is not misleading because I am on the record and speaking candidly about the need for a constitutional amendment. Happens to be a constitutional amendment that would do such take such action in this very committee. And so, as part of a fiscal plan, needing both a resolution and a bill to constitutionalize and dedicate the PFD program in a manner that is outside of the appropriations process, both of those pieces of legislation would be required. I can only talk about one of those pieces of legislation right now, and that's the bill that's before me.
Well, follow up, Mr. Representative Carpenter, thank you. Are you concerned that the bringing in the more than the Department of Revenue function handled by the Department of Revenue for more than four decades of paying permanent fund dividends into the Permanent Fund Corporation will confuse or divide its mission to make the maximum return on investments for of the permanent fund's assets by adding this additional function of paying permanent fund dividends to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation in this bill?
Through the chair to Representative Groh, Representative Carpenter for the record, have spoken with the representatives from the Permanent Fund Corporation, and they did indicate that it would be a new role for them. It would be a challenge to figure out, but it is something that's doable. And I would just point to the many, many corporations that exist in our country that do the business of the corporation and pay a dividend. And it's just one more program to manage. It obviously is going to cost money and will take people to do that, but it is just a function of the corporation that they would learn to do. So it's just adding an additional task. They would figure it out.
Thank you, Mr. Carpenter. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? All right. So thanks for presenting HB 110 to the committee, and we'll be holding this bill over to bring up at a later date. So now we will hear HB 142, state tails or sales and use tax.
Okay, Mr. Chair, we've got a sponsor statement and a sectional analysis. I'll take the sponsor statement, and my staff will do the sectional analysis. And unfortunately, we don't have a fiscal note back for this particular bill yet, but we will provide the committee with that when we get it. Okay. So for the records, Representative Carpenter, state leaders should naturally be motivated to grow Alaska's private economy. The prospect of jobs and opportunity would allow our children to stay in Alaska, would attract development that would bring infrastructure investment, and would make retiring here comfortable for all employees. Not just those who have government jobs. Inertia in the state capital, however, keeps the state legislature focusing on government growth without corresponding economic growth. We can change that with a long-term fiscal plan for the state that incentivizes such growth. The Alaska legislature has the opportunity this session to pass a package of bills and resolutions that will do a few things. One, it'll take the permanent fund dividend payment out of the annual budget process and require the PFD to be paid by formula in law. It'll place a limit on government spending in a manner that incentivizes economic growth. It'll reform our state government management and budget processes and practices. And it'll promote economic growth with business tax cuts, make carbon credits available to Alaska resource developers, streamline regulations, and make licensing easier. as part of a package of bills that include all of these structural reforms, we can institute a low-rate, broad-based sales tax that will bring a small share of the ensuing economic activity to government. This will further incentivize legislators to pursue economic growth. House Bill 142 imposes a 2-cent tax on all sales of goods and services purchased in Alaska and allows the legislature to share half of that tax revenue with certain municipalities that meet certain criteria, including keeping a lid on property tax. According to the Tax Foundation, 45 states and the District of Columbia collect statewide sales tax. Local sales taxes are collected in 38 states. In some cases, they can rival or even exceed state rates. The five states with the highest average combined state and local sales tax are Louisiana at 9.55%, Tennessee at 9.5%, Arkansas at 9.4%, Alabama at 9.2%, and Oklahoma at 8.98%. Sales tax rates differ by state, but sales tax bases also impact how much revenue is collected from a tax and how the tax affects the economy. House Bill 142 is designed after the South Dakota system as the broadest-based tax in the nation. Broad-based systems keep rates low, keep compliance simple, and creates as few economic distortions as possible. Except for the five states that have no sales tax, a 2-cent statewide sales tax would maintain Alaska's ranking as the lowest state and locally combined sales tax rate in the nation.
Through the chair, very quickly, I think that should say 2% of Representative Carpenter, that last sentence, I just thought that should be accurate.
Yeah, it actually says it in the bill.
2% statewide sales tax.
Through the chair to Representative McKay, you are correct, and I am correct. A 2% tax is a 2-cent per dollar tax.
Then I should say per dollar. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Through the chair, this is Kendra. I'm going to go over the sectional analysis.
Very good.
So Section 1, HB 142, amends Alaska Statute 28.10.021 to add sales and use taxes for vehicles. Section 2, HB 142, amends Alaska Statute 43.05.240, Section A, to add sales tax collectors to those who may file for grievances and their seller's permit or resale exemption certificate is revoked. Section 3, Alaska Statute 43, is amended by adding a new chapter to institute a statewide sales tax of 2% of sale or lease of tangible property or services and a 2% use tax on tangible personal property. The use tax is applied to tangible personal property acquired outside of Alaska as a result of a transaction that would have been subject to the sales tax if it had occurred in Alaska. The use tax is also applied to tangible personal property that has been converted to a use that is subject to tax. The use tax is additionally applied to services in Alaska that would be subject to a sales tax if purchased in this state, remote purchases. HB 142 provides exemptions to the sales tax for sales that are exempt by Federal Law 26 U.S.C. Internal Revenue Code, government, tax-exempt corporations, employee wages, interest on loans and deposits, stock dividends, financial service fees, insurance premiums, personal uses of property or between business partners, the sale, lease, or construction of real property. HB 142 provides tax credits for sales or use taxes paid to another state. HB 142 requires businesses to acquire a seller's permit before doing business in Alaska. HB 142 exempts resale from taxation. It allows the Department of Revenue to suspend or revoke a seller's permit if the person who holds the permit fails to comply with the provision of this law. HB 142 requires the Department of Revenue to enter the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement, a multi-state agreement for processing of cross-state transactions. HB 142 allows for a municipal share. The legislature may appropriate half the revenue collected from this tax to municipalities. A municipality may receive an appropriation under this section if the municipality does not collect either property taxes in excess of 10 mils or an oil and gas production tax or gas pipeline property tax. Section 4 contains conforming language. Section 5 provides for a transition to allow the Department of Revenue to adopt regulations under the Administrative Procedures Act. It allows for services contracted before the effective date of the tax to be exempt from the tax. It allows for persons to apply for a seller's permit or a resale permit before the effective date of this act. Section 6 provides an immediate effective date for Section 5. Section 7 provides an effective date for the remainder of this act of January 1st, 2025.
Thank you, Ms. Broussard. Anything further, Representative Carpenter, before we go to questions?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to say, as Representative Carpenter, for the record, that I don't take this lightly of instituting or bringing forward a bill that would institute a tax, a sales tax on Alaskans. If we were having a conversation that didn't include a bunch of other components of a fiscal plan, I would not be sitting here before you. I recognize that in order for us to move the state forward in a direction that is pro-economic growth in our non-oil private sector economy, we need to make some steps and take some steps that get us in that direction. And it's going to take all of us to make that happen. So in the spirit of identifying some options and some compromise to be able to move the state forward, I'm presenting this as an option for a broad-based revenue choice that ties our state government decisions, our budget decisions, to economic activity in the state. Very few times have I had conversations with legislators in my tenure here in the legislature that revolve around how we can grow the economy in order as a solution to spending problems that we have experienced over the last few years. That is unfortunate because most people in the state of Alaska live and work in our private sector economy, and higher paying jobs and more of them are critical to Alaskans wanting to be in Alaska, even being able to be in Alaska, because they need to be able to provide for their families. So a sales tax or a broad-based tax that ties that economy to the government spend is important. But it's not just one thing that's being presented here. It is one component of an entire package that is intended to have a positive economic benefit to the state. And so I want everybody to understand that that is how we should be looking at this. The lens that we should be looking at it is just one component of a larger plan. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, my concern, and I'll hear you speak to it, is that rural Alaska has a much higher price for groceries, for example. And I just did a little Googling, so I don't know how trustworthy, but the average price of milk in Anchorage right now is about $4.20, and the average price of a gallon of milk in Bethel is about $8.80. So if people in rural Alaska are paying twice as much for their groceries, they'll be paying twice as much of that tax. And so we would be getting a disproportionate amount of our sales tax income from rural Alaska. Because, or any place where the goods are much higher than they are in the bigger cities in Alaska. So my fear would be is that some of the people who could afford this tax the least would be the ones expected to pay the most of it. That's my concern.
Representative McKay.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Gray, I think you have to normalize that based on population. Because most of the people live in the rail belt. If you see what I'm saying, you're right, but it's, what is it, a quarter of the population live in the rural areas or something like that, okay? So 75% of your people live in the $4.50 milk region, and 25% of the people live in the $16 region, right? So,
right. Well, through the chair,
so it's not,
I still don't think it's fair for that
no, no,
group of Bethel to pay more than anybody else.
I think you said half the revenue would come from rural. I don't think it's half, but something else besides that. I just wanted not to get too sticky.
Yeah, so for what it's worth, you mentioned revenue, and I think I get where you were going, you know, that it's not fair to the folks in rural, but you did say something about the revenue generated would be less, and I meant
that they'd be paying a disproportionately high amount of the tax compared to Anchorage. I get that most of the money would come from Anchorage. And I guess if I were to ask a question, is there a way to control for that, a way to make it so rural Alaska isn't forced to pay a disproportionate amount of the tax or amount more than Anchorage for their groceries?
Through the chair, to Representative Gray, this is Representative Carpenter for the record. It's a really good question. I would just like to answer it by saying perhaps the legislature would like to investigate ways to reduce the cost of a gallon of milk in rural Alaska. Would that benefit rural Alaska? We're talking a modernization or somehow a better transportation system to get food to Western Alaska. Wouldn't that be a better solution than
through the chair, that would be an amazing solution.
And I would just like to say, follow on that, that where there's a will, there's a way. And the only way is if we have a will to grow our economy. We're not going to find solutions to those big problems if we don't have a growing economy. 16 cents is what a $8 gallon of milk would cost additionally, right? 2 cents. If that's in a municipality that has an ability to share in the state revenue, that a portion of the state's collection of that sales tax would come to that municipality or that city. So that would somewhat alleviate the cost in that area of the percentage increase, the higher cost of goods in the area. Maybe they don't have to have their own tax because they've got a share from the state. We're talking hypotheticals here because I don't know which village we're talking about, which city we're talking about, but you're right. I think finding a way to incentivize solutions to those big problems is what we really need to be talking about.
Okay, any other questions? Representative Groh.
I have a number in more than one category. Well, the first one is handled by Representative McKay that I would have asked. Representative Carpenter, you made a big focus and a point of emphasis on help boosting the economy. This proposed sales tax proposal is, of course, a tax on commerce. I keep thinking about this article I saw on Forbes entitled "The Impact of Sales Tax is Growing for Small Businesses," and it talks about the complexity and resource-intensive nature of sales taxes. Make it clear why small businesses are heavily impacted. Do you share my concern that a sales tax will be borne most heavily by our small and local businesses?
So, Representative Groh, through the chair, this is Representative Carpenter for the record, a business that collects a sales tax passes that cost on to the consumers. So it's not the business that's going to be paying the tax, it is the consumers. And it wouldn't matter whether it's an income tax or a sales tax. It gets passed on to the consumers. Corporate tax gets passed on to consumers.
Follow up. I'm talking about the compliance costs, the actual cost of collecting it. And I know that a number of communities around our state do have sales taxes. My own community of Anchorage has never had one, despite more than 30 attempts to get it since statehood, or attempts to bring it. So my point is there'll be a whole bunch of small businesses, including small restaurants in my district, like the Lucky Wishbone or Oscar's Taco Grande, that have to comply. Does that bother you, and would you like to look for an exemption from for smaller local businesses from the sales tax in terms of the complying with it?
So through the chair, Representative Groh, might be a bad example to use Anchorage as an example of what right looks like. I think they're struggling with finances as they are now, and small businesses in Anchorage are very challenged under their current regime. The concept of a sales tax that works in partnership with small businesses is not unattainable. It is a cost of doing business, and I'm not concerned about the business community being able to figure that piece out. The large corporations figure out a much more complex corporate income tax, and they can figure it out. I think what we should be concerned with is if we're going to continue down the path of eliminating the permanent fund dividend that most small businesses would not want to see go away as a way to continue our state services, if that's the alternative to not passing a sales tax, then that is going to hurt small businesses a whole lot more than the compliance cost of a sales tax.
Like I said, Mr. Chair, I have a follow-up related to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, of course, another alternative to a sales tax might be a high earner tax, focusing on high earners. And getting to that, the median household income, according to the Federal Reserve Bank, is $81,000. How much do you expect the average household will pay each year with a sales tax?
That's a good question. I'm going to have to get back to you on the answer. I don't have those numbers readily available on that.
Thank you. A follow-up. At the end of each year, will each household get a tax return, a sales tax return, showing how much they paid in sales taxes throughout the year?
I'm not sure whether they would or not. I don't think so.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what, Representative Groh, I'm going to let Representative Allard, Representative Tilton both have questions, and we're trying to wrap this up, and you're getting a little far afield from what the bill really talks about. So, Representative Allard.
Thank you, and through the chair, I think it's just a comment that although Anchorage, the MOA, doesn't have sales tax, we did pass an additional 10 cents fuel tax per gallon, and sometimes that's a way to circumvent the system. So although we don't have a sales tax, we do have a 10 cent tax on each gallon of our fuel. So there is ways that the municipality has found to further tax our residents. That's all. Thank you.
Mr. Representative Chair. Tilton. No? So I think I will wrap this up just by saying that many other cities in Alaska have a tax and have no problem with it. Wasilla has a sales tax. When Wasilla needs a new library, they put it to the voters. Hey, we're going to increase by a half a cent for 3 years. They get the money they need for the library, they put it in the bank, they buy a library, and then the tax goes back down to 2% or whatever it is. Wasilla right now has zero debt. So the sales tax in Wasilla, who doesn't have that much tourism, doesn't have that much people outside of the city coming in there, the sales tax scheme that they are using works fabulously. So I understand the idea that we want to go after high income earners, but from the data that I saw during the fiscal policy working group, there are not enough high earners in Alaska to satisfy the amount of money we need. The only possibility is a broad-based sales tax, regressive as it might seem to us, to some. So would you agree with that statement? And maybe you can build off of that since we sort of did the fiscal policy working group together.
To the chair, this is Representative Carpenter for the record. I have spent some time looking at a sales tax, but I have not spent much time looking at an income tax, as it's not preferable to me. I think states that have income taxes or progressive income taxes are not as competitive as states that have sales taxes, and so that is what I have focused on. I don't mind having the conversation about the comparison between the two, and frankly, if we're going to make a good decision within House Ways and Means, we probably should have the conversation. So, but I am not the subject matter expert on an income tax, as it isn't something that I've done a whole lot of research on.
Okay, thank you. One follow-up, Representative Groh.
Given that the study by the University of Alaska's Institute of Social Economic Research shows that more than 70% of Alaskans would do better, would pay less under income tax, under sales tax. The sales tax would hit them, 70% of Alaskans harder. Is that a relevant factor to you in the in consideration of the choices between them? And also given that the, this very House of Representatives passed an income tax that would have raised $700 million in 2017. So in terms of the revenues that are possible and available, clearly it's not quite what some would say. Do either of those considerations play into your support of the sales tax over an income tax that would focus on high earners paid by both residents and non-residents?
Representative Groh, this is Representative Carpenter through the chair. The concept has entered my mind. I have considered it. I don't know what the option is right now, because the only thing that we have before us is a sales tax. We don't have an income tax to discuss in this committee or in this body. No one is. That's not something that we're discussing. So what is very likely to happen is that the PFD is going to be that tax that gets levied on Alaskans. And that is the most regressive form of tax that the state could levy on Alaskans. And that is what has been happening since 2017, I believe. 2016. So if the option is the most regressive tax or a less regressive tax, and I have political agreement within this body to pass the lesser of those two evils, then I would go with the lesser of those two evils. And that is what's before us as an option.
All right. Thanks. So with that, we'll be holding this bill over to bring up at a later date, as well as other things, I guess. And I'll take a brief at ease to return Representative Carpenter his gavel and his iPad.
Okay, back on the record, Representative Carpenter back in control of the gavel and the iPad. Okay, let's just talk about the way ahead for a few minutes, and then we'll be adjourning for the night. Next week, we plan to work on the long-term fiscal model that we've kind of wrapping all this together and pull. You see on the screen in front of us here that there's a lot of different bills in play. And what the idea here at the beginning of the session was to model each one of these to see how they're going to impact the long-term fiscal plan of the state. And so next week, we're going to attempt to do that. Next week is also a continuation of our budget week. And we're heavily reliant upon legislative finance folks for both of these endeavors. And so it isn't clear to me yet whether we're going to have the support necessary this in the evening time frame based on what happens on the floor as to whether we're going to be able to get to this. We've been working with legislative finance to update the fiscal model so that we can look at this. I would also like to solicit, given that I've just presented two bills here, I would also like to solicit the committee's input as to any additional spending and revenue options that you want to have modeled. It's important for us to do our due diligence, and if we do need to compare an income tax versus a sales tax, then Representative Groh, let's do it, okay? We do need to have something in front of us that we can take action on that makes sense with the model instead of just a hypothetical. That's what separates us from the Fiscal Policy Working Group, is that we've actually got things in front of us. And I say things in front of us. We've actually got bills and resolutions in front of us. Okay. Representative McCabe.
So I wonder if it'd be worth it to have, instead of having this big formal meeting, whenever we get Director Painter here with his new model, to have sort of a more of an informal working group kind of thing, still on the record, so we're open meeting, but where we can sort of informally suggest, hey, let's try this mix and that mix, and let's put this together, and let's see how this works, and let's see what this percentage works. I know it's a little bit unorthodox, but hey, you got the gavel and the iPad, so.
So, to be honest with you, I think this group works really well together, and to the extent that we can ask questions and dialogue, mm-hmm. I'm fully willing to do that, so.
Perfect.
Okay. If there aren't any other questions or things to come before the committee, then I'm going to go ahead and adjourn us as, let's see, the time is 7:29 p.m. on Wednesday, March 29th.